Welcome back to Inside on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Marilyn Nelson, an educator, poet, author, a national treasure. You may know Marilyn Nelson as a three-time finalist for the National Book Award and the author of some 20 poetry books for adults and children. If you're a fan of NPR, which I imagine you are if you're listening to Insight, you may remember she wrote a verse memoir named one of NPR's best books of 2014, a series of 50 unrhymed songs about growing up in the 1950s in an African-American military family. This week, she is in Sacramento, which is kind of a homecoming of sorts, to share her voice in recognition of Juneteenth. Nelson has several events that she's going to be attending this week, including an author talk and book signing at Underground Books in Oak Park, as well as attending a Juneteenth event at the California State Library. And we are very happy. Insight is on her itinerary. So let's give a big welcome to poet Marilyn Nelson. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you for having the time.
So you were born in Cleveland, Ohio. You grew up in a military family, but you also spent some time here in Sacramento. How was your journey, or just kind of tell us about your journey as a child and how it led you to Hiram Johnson and UC Davis, correct?
Yes, yes. Oh, well, my dad was in the Air Force. We spent, I think he had two tours at Mather. So we were in Mather when I spent fourth grade going to Mather School. And then also I think we lived there when I was in seventh grade for a while. And then we came back again when I was in ninth grade. And at that point, my dad retired from the service, and he and my mother had fallen in love with Sacramento. So we hung on, and I wound up going to all of high school at Hiram Johnson and then going to Davis.
When did poetry become an outlet for you?
Very early. I think I started writing poems probably when I was in third or fourth grade. There was an old poetry textbook around the house that traveled with us from place to place, which had been one of my dad's college textbooks. And I started reading that early and just fell in love with poetry.
How did, or did California or even Sacramento, did it influence your creativity and your writing?
I'm not sure. You know, everything is bundled up into one clump of impressions. I do know that I think probably most people who become writers start writing when they're teenagers. And I do remember sitting in the front yard playing guitar with my boyfriend sitting next to me and my thinking, someday I'll look back on this moment.
When you look back at your decades-long career as a poet, how do you reflect on that, from being in third and fourth grade to writing poems and it really guiding you, being a big part of your life?
I am very grateful for the directions I was given earlier. I had a sixth grade teacher in Kittery Point, Maine, who told me that she thought I would grow up to be a well-known poet. And I had a teacher in Paul Lawrence Dunbar High School in Fort Worth, Texas, who loaned me her personal copies of books by African American poets. So I had a lot of encouragement early on, and I'm still grateful for that.
How do you approach writing differently for youth than adults?
No swears. I don't know that it's that different. Seriously, no swears, no vulgarity. But I try to offer the same kind of insights to children that I hope to offer for adults. Children are intelligent and creative and a joy to work with, and so are adults.
Yeah. Your poetry, you know, it tackles, you know, race relations and just inequities. And we've had these conversations, especially in recent years, you know, that inequities touch every facet of life, from mm-hmm. education to healthcare to police relations to incarceration. How does it shape your work now? Or how do you, I guess, reflect on the time that we're in, and especially the last 3 years?
Meaning COVID?
Meaning COVID, and then also the events that happened during COVID, from the murder of George Floyd, and also there's the shooting of unarmed, largely people of color across the country.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry. I've probably forgotten the first part of your question, even. I have a very short memory span.
Well, I guess what brought it up was when I was looking at an event that's going to be at Underground Books, and one mm-hmm. of the quotes that they used of yours was, "When we lose contact, we see only hate, only injustice, a giant so great its shadow blocks our sun." And under that was talking about how hope is courageous. And mm-hmm. I think that when I read your work, it's guided by that, by this courageous hope in the face of injustice.
I see. Okay, thank you for helping me clarify it. That is a quote from a poem about George Washington Carver, and it's based on a Bible class Carver used to give at Tuskegee. And what Carver believed, it was a response to a question someone asked Carver about lynchings. What does God want from us in when we see lynchings? And Carver responds that we can't stop hoping. We can't stop believing that things will turn out right. We can't go through life hiding under a shield. We have to be open, because that's where the life of life is. Being outside of the shield, in the sunlight. And I guess that's what I believe. And one of the aims of at least several of my poems is to present incidents in which people have shown kind of crazy courage and had their courage welcomed and proved to be not crazy at all, to be necessary and a good way to face the world.
I would love if you could share a poem. I believe you brought one in.
I did. I
possibly too.
Possibly, if I can. I have a book that was published as a young adult book, so it's kind of for children. And let's see, what poem did I mark here? This one is actually, I'll read two. One, they're from the same book. I only brought one book, so this one is. It's from a book called How I Discovered Poetry, and this is the one NPR paid some praise to. It's a book about growing up in the 50s in a military family. And in this poem, let me see, I am about 6 or 7 years old, and it's a poem that takes place as we are driving across country, driving through Colorado after driving home to Ohio to a child cousin's funeral. This is 1953. I'm sorry, it's too long I'm talking. It's called Snake, Lowry Air Force Base, Colorado, 1953. As soon as we got here, we turned around and drove back through the no guardrail mountains, connecting the dots of farm mailboxes to towns and faceless people who don't count. Mama hugged Aunt Karma and Uncle George. Daddy wiped his tears with his handkerchief. Onita wasn't in her pink bedroom. She wasn't in the hospital either. They said she was in that box. She was dead. We drove back through the frightening mountains. Jennifer and I chanted, "There's a snake," to keep ourselves from looking at the huge and scare-defying emptiness. When you die, you go to a different school. And that's a poem partly based on studies of children who apparently have trouble understanding what death is. They think, I mean, in this case, the child is a military child, so she thinks dying is just being transferred from, yeah, from one place to another.
And we only have about 45 seconds left, and I want people to know that they can actually see you in person and enjoy your work and take it in person at an event at Underground Books, as well as the California State Library. How does it feel, just very quickly? I mean, does it feel good to be back in Sacramento for the week?
It's a very wonderful experience. I hardly recognize anything.
No.
Sacramento has changed so much, but to be back in the old places and to meet people I haven't seen for, gosh, I met people yesterday whom I haven't seen for probably 50 years, and it's great. It's wonderful.
That's special. Yeah. Thank you so much for stopping by, Marilyn.
Thanks very much.
It was a treat. That is poet, educator, and author Marilyn Nelson. If you'd like more information on where to see Marilyn while she's in Sacramento, we have all of that information posted on our website, capradio.org/insight. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.